Today on Wings, hormone replacement therapy was a great moneymaker for pharmaceutical companies, and as of 2016, some are promoting it again.
Boy, this stuff just does not do what generations of women and doctors had been led to believe that it did.
To learn about the study that debunked almost all their claims, stay tuned.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
While some level of estrogen is always produced by women's bodies, during menopause this amount declines. Hormone replacement therapy was developed to offset this decline. Hormones like Premarin, extracted from the urine of pregnant mares, were widely marketed. Quickly linked to an increase in endometrial cancer, estrogen replacements were then prescribed with a progestin. In 2002, women participating in the Women's Health Initiative study were ordered to stop taking estrogen plus progestin because of an increased risk of breast cancer. Increased incidence of blood clots and heart attacks were also reported. By 2004, the women taking only estrogen were also ordered to stop. Increased risks of stroke, dementia, and cognitive decline were linked to both estrogen and estrogen plus progestin. This landmark 15-year project is the largest women's health clinical trial ever. The efforts of women like Cynthia Pearson and Adrienne Fu Bergman led to the initiation of this study. Cynthia Pearson, executive director of the National Women's Health Network, tells their story.
Science, as we experienced it in the United States in the 70s, was solidly part of the patriarchy, and health, as a biomedical science, women's experience of health in the United States was colored by race, class, age, sexual orientation, ableism, all those nuances, but it was also very strongly influenced by science as a part of patriarchy. So the National Women's Health Network, as a feminist organization, as part of the movement of the 70s, wanted to do its part in dismantling that. Part of the way we dismantled it was much like other organizations that sprang up in the 70s, self-help clinics, Our Bodies Ourselves, organizations that at their core respected the way women described their experience of their bodies and brought women's experience of their bodies back to the center rather than the professional medicalization of women's experience of their bodies. So as the National Women's Health Network, we believe that we can use science to challenge science. So our core strategic approach and how we try to improve women's health involves creating an analysis of important women's health issues. And in addition to weaving women's experience of that important health issue in, we weave in a science base to it. So I want to talk about menopause hormone therapy and what the network did to challenge a definition of older women's bodies as deficient that was created by a patriarchal approach, driven by market forces, and underpinned by science that was crappy, that we undid and changed. The part of the menopause hormone story that's real is that for women who have symptoms with their menopause, those are real. And as we value women's experience of their body, we value and respect and completely believe the women who tell us that they're not only having symptoms, they're experiencing symptoms that are not manageable. And all the information and all the good tips about self-help home remedies and less invasive remedies than pharmaceutical hormones aren't working. So we acknowledge, one, that these symptoms are real for the minority of women who have them. And we also acknowledge that estrogen therapy and estrogen plus progestin therapy is very effective for most women who try it. And because it's so effective and because it fits in so neatly into a biological theory of women's bodies that isn't actually biologically proven but supports a patriarchal ideology, there's been no or almost no look for anything else that's effective. But there was a drive to expand the market beyond effective symptom relief and to bring these products into the everyday life of all older women, or virtually all older women, and the drive accelerated as the baby boomers got closer to that age. Because that drive to expand the market happened simultaneously with consumer movements, health movements, feminist movements, there had to be a scientific justification. And I'll tell you about the different waves of different types of scientific justification for this expanded use. But as lay women, we were able to undo those scientific justifications. We were able to figure this out. And the basic thing that we struggled hard to undo was the claim that modern women outlive their ovaries, and that the high levels of hormones that are present in our bodies during our reproductive years and that decline with natural menopause need to be replaced. And there have been claims that because the average lifespan of women was about 50, as recently as 100 years ago, that means that women weren't meant to live beyond age 50, and it's just been modern medicine that's kept us alive, but we're not living well because our bodies aren't, they're missing something. And these statements were made repeatedly in one scientific meeting after another. Menopause was compared to diabetes. You replace insulin, why wouldn't you replace estrogen? It was an ideology and a dogma that we knew was wrong, and we knew we had to challenge. And just for anyone who's stuck on those statistics, just because most women either died in childbirth or before they even got to childbearing years through infectious diseases doesn't mean that as a species we didn't evolve to live long after menopause. So we knew we had to challenge this dogma. The people who were interested in promoting widespread hormone use for virtually all older women were starting to come up with scientific justification that we then undid. The first really important scientific justification, which was osteoporosis, took up much of the 80s and was responsible for quite an expansion in the number of women using hormone therapy indefinitely, much longer beyond the time when their symptoms might have naturally eased off. And I'm just skipping that for time. By 1989, there were so many women in the United States that had used hormones that epidemiologists were able to do many observational studies. You've probably heard of these. The Nurses Health Study, the Rancho Bernardo Study, the Leisure World Study, the Framingham Study, on and on and on. There were many observational studies, and in almost every case, those observational studies found that the women on estrogen had fewer heart attacks, were less likely to die prematurely, and had overall decreased mortality. It was easy for promoters of estrogen who were either coming from an ideological mindset or a market mindset to say, we've got this proved. But there was one very easy question to ask, which even us lay women could pose, which is selection bias, meaning women with the most resources to get health care are most likely to follow the advice of a health care provider, but they're also the women who are most likely to be more healthy on average than women without easy access or regular access to health care. So we've tried to cast doubt on what was put forward as a proven fact. So in 1990, the manufacturer of the most often prescribed estrogen, which is Premarin, and the manufacturer's wife, asked the FDA to give it approval to market to healthy women to prevent heart disease. And they ignored the fact that they were breaking the FDA's rule and not coming with a controlled trial, a trial in which people who seem all the same at the beginning volunteer, and they're all given an intervention that looks the same, in this case pills that look like Premarin, but half of them are placebos. That's a controlled trial. That trial, as I pointed out at that meeting in June of 1990, has been done for every single heart disease prevention drug used by men, including baby aspirin, but not ever, ever for women with estrogen. With that, you know, pointing out their own rules to them and being able to undo the scientific claims, although we certainly didn't persuade any of the drug promoters who were making the claims to change their minds, but we managed to give enough ammunition to the FDA policymakers that they turned down this decision. Well, two things happened simultaneously. The drug companies kept marketing, and in that era, that was still marketing to physicians. And we pressed to get this question answered. And through a series of political circumstances that were many women's groups coming together, pressing for more federal dollars for women's health research for a lot of different reasons, we were able to seize the moment when a woman was appointed head of the National Institutes of Health and get this study put into place. So at the same time, drug companies were persuading doctors through continuing education, through ghostwritten articles in medical journals, through the drug company salesperson visits to doctors in their office, that the evidence looked so good on hormones and heart disease, the federal government was beginning to spend over $500 million to study that question. And we, throughout that time, tried to keep the word out there that the emperor had, not no clothes, but just maybe some underpants, that, okay, estrogen works for symptoms, absolutely, but this other stuff you're hearing actually technically hasn't been proven. And we wrote a book, and we went on like that through the 1990s, trying to use our book, our newsletter, our access to the media to keep pointing out that although you hear this everywhere, it actually hasn't been proven. In the mid-90s, there was the beginning of the Alzheimer's claims that estrogen's really good for heart and probably good for Alzheimer's prevention too. Here again, we pointed out the same problems with the studies. The studies were still the exact same kind that just showed association and not cause and effect proof. But what came onto the market next was direct-to-consumer advertising. Ads for prescription drugs by name and reason on television and in magazines. And sales by then skyrocketed. Premarin became the most often prescribed drug in the United States in the late 1990s for several years in a row. The claims in these ads were just this side of breaking the law. They should go to the Advertising Hall of Fame and the Ethical Hall of Shame, because the ads brilliantly communicated a benefit that had never been proven. So just to take a couple more recent ones, Patti LaBelle on TV singing about a whole new attitude. Now, there were no words spoken or put on the screen by the manufacturer that claimed energy, sexuality, vitality, better mood. So they didn't break the rules, but Patti's song communicated that. Similarly, Lauren Hutton was paid by Wyeth to be a spokesperson, and she would do these interviews of celebrities' beauty tips for the over 50s. And she would say, just out of her own mind, you know, my number one beauty tip is estrogen. If I had to be on a desert island, it's the one thing I would take with me. And I just somehow think her financial relationship with the company might have had a little to do with it. But we kept out there communicating our message. And finally, amazingly enough, that study that we had helped push the federal government to start in 1991 released its first results in 2002 and follow-up results this year, 2004. And it found in both of the most common ways to take hormones, estrogen alone or estrogen plus progestin, neither prevented heart disease. The estrogen plus progestin has more results out now, so there we know that it did not prevent Alzheimer's at all. It did not prevent cognitive decline. In fact, the numbers are a little too small to know for sure, but it might have increased the risk of those conditions. And in both estrogen alone and estrogen plus progestin, it increased the risk of stroke, as well as blood clots, as well as gallbladder disease. So, boy, this stuff just does not do what generations of women and doctors had been led to believe that it did. And what did we do then? Well, we celebrated and we called for policy change. We said, what this shows is what we could have known all along, which there's nothing a woman loses at menopause that needs to be replaced to ensure that she can live the rest of her life healthfully. And what you can conclude from that is that we're not going to be able to have health practice based on evidence with the huge invasion of drug company money and control of medical education. But boy, when you can show so clearly that something that was believed because it fit an ideology was not only not right, it was wrong and harmful. Women got hurt. I mean, we tried hard to let as many women as we could know that they should only take hormones for what they had been proven to work for. If they suffered a harm, that's terrible, but at least there's a balance because they got a benefit. But for all the women who believed their doctors, many of whom were well-meaning, that this is the best thing, I don't want to see you with a heart attack 20 years from now, they got snookered and some of them got hurt, and that was completely unnecessary.
Cynthia Pearson is the executive director of the National Women's Health Network, a membership-based organization that has been working for 30 years to give women a greater voice in the healthcare system. They accept no money from pharmaceutical companies, tobacco companies, or manufacturers of medical devices.
At the time, there were about 22% women in the medical school class. We had a course in sexually transmitted diseases that they didn't let women take. Women weren't allowed to examine male urology students at Georgetown, but we could at the Veterans Administration hospitals.
Adrienne Fu Behrman is a medical doctor who has served on the board of the National Women's Health Network. She specializes in complementary and alternative medicine at Georgetown University. Dr. Fu Behrman speaks firsthand about the influence of drug companies in medicine.
Medical training is this really horrible, damaging process, okay? They deprive you of sleep, of food, the company of your loved ones, and then they bombard you with more information than you can possibly take in. It's brainwashing, okay? So, and it works. Nobody takes care of you in medical training at all. But people who are really nice to you are the drug reps. They give you food, they're very flattering, they give you stethoscopes, they give you books. This really starts in medical training. Even physicians who want to avoid the influence of drug companies cannot, because most of the speakers at even scientific meetings, not the directly drug company funded dinners on cruise ships kinds of things, but just regular scientific meetings, many of the speakers are paid by drug companies. So we're not talking anything really subtle here.
Fu Behrman disputes drug companies' attempts to disparage the Women's Health Initiative and explains the dangers of new hormone therapies that are being marketed today.
Before the Women's Health Initiative, there had never been a randomized controlled trial of hormones in women with cardiovascular disease endpoints. But there had been one done in men in the early 1970s, the Coronary Drug Project, because once it was first postulated that estrogen actually was beneficial to the cardiovascular system, and there are ways in which it does seem like it's quite beneficial. It lowers cholesterol levels, it decreases arterial reactivity. It has a lot of different effects that would lead you to think that it was helpful for cardiovascular disease. So they tested it in men, and they developed blood clots and heart attacks, and that trial, the estrogen part of the Coronary Drug Project, was stopped early because of adverse effects in men. And yet it was another 30 years before that same sort of study was done in women, and during that time, estrogen preparations were promoted and really pushed on women. If you look at the literature that physicians read during this time, there are these articles on pressuring women into taking hormones, and we all have stories of women who are radical feminists, women's health activists, being pushed by their own physicians into taking hormone therapy. Physicians really believed that this was helpful, but they believed this in the absence of scientifically valid data. And women physicians, by the way, pushed hormones more than men physicians. So one of the things that's happened since the end of the Women's Health Initiative is the drug companies are out there with their paid physicians trashing the Women's Health Initiative and saying things like, those women were too old, they were too sick, it wasn't a good study, it was a terrible study, they excluded women who had severe hot flashes, therefore these were not normal women in the study. And let me tell you, a lot of women don't have severe hot flashes. A lot of women don't have any hot flashes at all. What I found with women who did not have problematic menopause, did not have hot flashes, did not have vaginal dryness, which are really the only two symptoms that have been proven to be related to menopause, they don't talk about it so much with other women. Almost all of the women that I talk to, they'd say, well, I think I was different, or I, They're not different. And hard numbers are hard to come by, but it's probably somewhere between 20 and 30% of women who have severe symptoms. And there are other women who have manageable symptoms. And then there are women who have no symptoms at all. And even women with severe symptoms, often the symptoms will go away. It's usually in a couple of years. The experience really varies among different people. So since the Women's Health Initiative now, it's being trashed with all these ridiculous statements. Like one of my favorites is that, well, the average age of the women in the Women's Health Initiative was 63. Well, the women in the study ranged in age from 50 to 79. Of course their average age was 63. It doesn't mean they were all 63. It's actually the largest study of women in their 50s done ever in the world. There were more than 5,000 women in their 50s in this study, and they were normal women. And they weren't sick women. In fact, there are data showing that women who choose to enter clinical trials are actually healthier than the general population. So on one level, the drug companies are trashing the Women's Health Initiative. Then on the other level, they're promoting other hormone preparations, including half-strength hormone preparations and that sort of thing. All the benefits, none of the risks. This is, you know, again, without any data. And compounding pharmacies and herb companies and alternative supplement manufacturers and alternative hormone manufacturers are also jumping on this wagon saying, okay, well, synthetic hormones are bad. Now, so these natural, or sometimes called bioidentical hormones, estriol, estrone, and estradiol, these are the hormones that we have in our body. And so companies are pushing these and saying, well, these aren't horse estrogens. These aren't synthetic estrogens. These are your own estrogens, and therefore they're totally harmless. And in fact, they'll fend off breast cancer. They won't promote breast cancer, and they won't increase the risk of endometrial or uterine cancer. And they'll probably help prevent cardiovascular disease. Combinations of these hormones are sold usually under the names of Biest or Triest, and there are no clinical trials of Biest or Triest. There are some clinical trials of estriol and estradiol, and by the way, trials of estradiol show that it actually does increase the risk of stroke. It does not appear to be safer than other types of estrogen. Estriol is a weak estrogen that's used as hormone therapy to treat hot flashes in Europe. It does seem to work for that, but it also increases endometrial cancer risk. So it needs to be used with a progestin to protect the uterus in the same way that other drug estrogens are used. There's no particular advantage to Biest, Triest, or any of these hormones separately. We should not assume that they're safer, and don't believe anybody who tells you that. In fact, women who have higher levels of these hormones in their body naturally also have a higher rate of breast cancer. So just because something occurs in your body doesn't mean that it's totally harmless. And, you know, I would say the same thing about herbs and some other things as well, and to also make a distinction between herbs that are used in a way that's consistent with tradition and herbs that aren't. There are a lot of herbal preparations or alternative preparations that are sold, like ephedra or mahuang, which is a Chinese herb. It's also used in Western herbal medicine. It's used to treat asthma, bronchitis, and other conditions like that. And it's effective for those conditions, an effective bronchodilator. But in this country, ephedra was promoted for weight loss and for bodybuilding and as a recreational drug, herbal ecstasy. And it killed a lot of people. In all of these cases, very high doses of the herb were used in an effort to speed the metabolism, because that's what you'd want to do if you're trying to lose weight or get high. And that's a really dangerous overdose effect. So there are hundreds of cases of strokes, seizures, heart attacks, psychotic episodes, et cetera, that have been reported to the Food and Drug Administration associated with ephedra-containing products. And not one of those is due to the use of an ephedra mixture for treating asthma or bronchitis. There are complementary and alternative medicine therapies that work. There are actually quite a lot of them. And just some examples are chiropractic or massage for low back pain. There are randomized controlled trials showing that these are helpful. Biofeedback for urinary incontinence, for migraines, for tension headaches, acupressure or acupoint stimulation. It can be done by acupuncture or heat stimulation or electrical stimulation. There's a lot of different ways you can stimulate an acupuncture point. It's been shown to be effective for nausea and vomiting of many different etiologies, morning sickness, motion sickness, nausea and vomiting from chemotherapy. There have been many randomized controlled trials showing that that's effective. Ginkgo leaf extracts for early dementia, St. John's wort for depression. Though St. John's wort really brings up another issue. St. John's wort actually interacts with a large number of drugs. They do a lot of lectures on this to physicians. And it can also interfere with the action of the birth control pills. It can lower the hormone levels. in women who are taking birth control pills and can actually increase the risk of unexpected pregnancy, so it can lower the effectiveness of birth control pills. So while St. John's wort itself can be an effective antidepressant, it's not a good idea to mix it with chronic daily medications. So while there are therapies that are effective, we need to bring a scientific perspective and a critical perspective, not only to therapies in conventional medicine, but also to those in complementary and alternative medicine. Another thing to be beware of in alternative medicine is the use of alternative diagnostics or reinterpretation of conventional tests. So some of these alternative tests include salivary hormone analyses, stool tests for candida, blood tests for allergy, for food allergies. These are all unvalidated tests, and they're very expensive. Anything that fights off aging, any tests that purport to tell you how old you really are by looking at your blood or your urine or your saliva, and anything that says that we can tell you what vitamins or minerals you should take based on a sample of your hair or a sample of your blood, all of those are completely ridiculous. Now, of course, in the conventional medicine world, we're also very good at inventing diseases. Menopause as a disease is certainly one of them. And then fairly recently, perimenopause, for example, in which it's sort of the new PMS in that it sort of threw together all kinds of symptoms that people have sort of on a daily basis and then attributed them to a life phase. There's certainly women who have some PMS, have symptoms before the time of their period, breast swelling, that sort of thing. Some diseases can actually have more manifestation before the menstrual period. But to many women, just having some breast tenderness or constipation, it isn't really a big deal. For other women, they might have some severe symptoms. The mood change thing always sort of bothers me, though. I really like Mary Guinan's statement. She used to be at CDC, said that the problem wasn't PMS, but the rest of the month, women were suffering from prefollicular euphoria. Anyway, perimenopause is sort of the new, wastebasket term of, tired, joints ache. It's sort of a combination of everything that had to do with menstrual period and PMS and that used to be attributed to menopause. So it's fatigue, joint aches, light bleeding, heavy bleeding, irregular bleeding, any number of symptoms. My favorite statement that was in a magazine that went out to doctors was, the perimenopausal phase can be characterized by fertility or infertility. So it's hard to escape that label when they do the categories like that.
Dr. Adrienne Fu-Berman and Cynthia Pearson from the 2004 Annual Conference of the National Women's Studies Association, held in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
And I just want to say, don't be afraid of science and of doing research on health issues.
The research and activism of Dr. Adrienne Fu-Berman and many other women who are not medical doctors or scientists, like Cynthia Pearson of the National Women's Health Network, are an important part of the struggle against patriarchal scientific institutions and corporate profit at the expense of true women's health. For more information on the Women's Health Initiative, see their website at whi.org. The National Women's Health Network can be found on the web at womenshealthnetwork.org. This is Stacey Pettigrew reporting for Wings.
To hear Wings shows again, email wings@wings.org. Thanks for longtime support from Suzette Cullen, Genevieve Vaughn, and your local community radio station. The Wings sound logo is from Lee Bana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.